This is the Amp Hour Podcast. Released March 29th, 2020. Episode 486. Medical kits, they're the future.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
In lockdown.
In lockdown. Okay, so here's the thing. Every podcast that's out there has talked about COVID-19 or coronavirus. We're going to have to mention it. I just don't want the whole show to be about it because I'm like deleting podcasts. I can't listen to them. I can't hear any more about it. So let's get it all out and then we'll switch gears and we'll be done with it and talk about something else.
Okay, no worries.
How you doing?
I'm still at the lab. You're at home, are you?
I am, yeah. Even though, so my workspace, M-Hub, is somehow got an exemption and is, I could go in, but my partner asked me not to, and I'm heeding her wishes, and it's just...
Right, okay, yep.
So I have moved labs in the past few weeks because of this. I have moved my entire lab here, basically.
Right, so the whole thing. Well, you didn't have a huge amount. It's not like you had a 50 square meter lab to move. And workbenches and, you know.
Yeah, it's mostly like test gear and soldering equipment. Yep. And I was able to optimize. So my partner and I have a roof deck area that we kind of, it's like an outdoor indoor kind of thing. And there's like an indoor spot. There's like a bar and all winter we don't use it. Luckily, it's warming up a little bit.
Ah, right.
I have completely commandeered the bar. The bar is
he's working from the bar.
Is now a soldering station. Yeah, it's I'll post a picture. Or I'll add a picture to the show notes. I was pretty proud of that, but otherwise it's been a little rough.
Yep.
How about you? I mean, you got kiddos at home. A lot of people, I'm sure, have kiddos at home.
Yeah, they've been home this week, and it's just I lost track of days. I didn't know today was recording day, which is not the first time that's happened, but it's just
sure.
Losing track because it's so chaotic at the moment. Yeah, although I rode my bike here this morning. I'm trying to ride my bike because the gyms are shut. So obviously, you know.
Yeah,
and, it's a ghost town.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw my tweet about this, but I woke up the other day and I had body aches. And I was like, oh my God.
This is like a
symptom.
This is it.
And then I remembered that in my delirium of being in the house for so long, Dave, I did a workout. I did a workout in my house with my partner, and that's why I was so sore.
Right,
it wasn't any symptom at all. It was a symptom of my being out of shape.
Well, again, keep a lookout for the EEV blog lab workout. I'm going to record a lab workout.
Yeah, those transformers, man, they're dense. They'll give you some resistance. A resistance workout. There you go. There it is. The resistance workout.
They can give you some reluctance.
That's how I treat every workout, Dave, is reluctantly.
Oh, love it. So everything's just shut down and stuff. Although I'm still getting deliveries. The only person I interact with is the DHL guy. Although one of the manufacturers did come over yesterday and they wanted to do an instrument swap. I've got an old one and they wanted to, well, not an instrument, a test board. And they wanted to swap it for some reason. So it's like, yeah, here you go. Thanks. Mm. Bye.
Yeah. Do not stick around. You're not invited in for tea.
That's it. Yeah. No, you know, normally they'd come in and we'd chat about the test equipment market for like hours and but no, not going to happen.
Well, it's good. You're doing it right. You're doing it right.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, I was thinking about like 2 weeks ago when we were talking, like it was a very different, even from a week ago it all moved pretty fast. So.
Yeah.
Hope everybody out there is staying safe. Hope your families are safe. I mean, hope you're staying inside. You're supposed to do that.
Don't be a dummy. We can knock this thing on the head shortly.
Yeah.
Except for O'Reilly, apparently. O'Reilly have shut down their events business, which is not not unexpected, I guess. What events did they run? I mean, they're a huge organization.
Yeah. Well, people might remember that they ran the Solid Conference. That was a couple years ago, and that only ran for two and a half years.
Solid, is that like a SolidWorks? What is that?
No, it was just Solid. It was like John Bruner was one of the guys that ran it, And it was like this cool, like kind of hardware meets software kind of, they were kind of picking up on that idea.
Right.
I really liked it because it was kind of this cross, you know, usually conferences are pretty deep. And so I like the ones that are more broad focused, like the Super Conference or things like that. And it didn't do that well for them, unfortunately.
Oh, it didn't. Okay.
It wasn't consistently, you know, and conference business, like the big conferences are interesting. I talked to John a little bit about this after the fact.
As in the design cons and stuff you're talking about? The big events you're talking about?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep, exactly. And so John, I believe, last I talked to John, he was working for, what's the SLA printer company? The one at MIT.
Form Labs?
Form Labs. That's it. Yeah. So he was working for, I'm not sure if he's still working for them. Anyways, I talked to him about, you know, his experience running the conference. And it was interesting because he just talked about like, it's such a big event and they have such high expenses. You know, I always like looked at the cost of a O'Reilly event. It's like, you know, $2,000 to go to it. And, you know, some people pay that, some people pay less or whatever, right? But it's really they're targeting companies that have training budgets. So if they're not getting the people with training budgets, if they're not getting corporate sponsorships on top of it, it's like multi-million dollar affairs to do that kind of thing. And they can swing really hard too if you don't get the attendance up. And so it's a big bet for them. And so I could see that, you know, O'Reilly shutting it down, this is probably a huge hit for them if they don't have the pricing to keep it going. Like you think about how much it would take if you're running a $2 million conference, you got to probably front, you know, $1 million just to get everything set up with, you know, everything. So it's a big business. So it's unfortunate because they're still running like Strata Conference was one of the big ones, like a data, I think that's data analysis and stuff like that. And they do a bunch of software ones still. So they're still around. They're doing
well. They aren't anymore because they shut down the events business.
Just the events, yeah. I mean, they're still around as the book publisher and
as the media group.
So yeah, it's unfortunate, but they were doing hardware stuff anyway, so they were kind of out of my field of view, you know.
Right, but therein lies opportunity, folks. In all this chaos and mayhem, on the other side of this, there is going to be opportunities for those who are perhaps out of work and keen to do something, start a new business, start a new direction. There'll be opportunities galore, I can assure you.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So get your thinking caps on and have a look at things that have shut down because they will pick up again. We will, all these, you know, all these larger companies or medium-sized companies, the larger companies will probably survive, but the medium-sized sort of companies, a lot of those will shut down and there'll be opportunities.
Yeah, and I think they'll come back in a different manner and different styles and stuff like that too, right? I think that
for sure.
On the conference side of things, I've been targeting personally like smaller conferences anyways, just because I think that you get to talk to more of the people there. It's more personal, but I think that's going to be more of a, maybe not a trend, but that's something that I always look for anyways. And there's probably the opportunity you're talking about, I think will probably pop up as like people are dipping a toe back into it. You know, companies might still be scared of it, but individuals might be able to run smaller conferences and, you know, bootstrap their way up.
Yep. And I'm not just talking about conferences, of course. I'm talking about all aspects of the industry, you know, every little niche that,
Yeah. And we talked about it last time, 2 weeks ago. And like, there are a lot of conferences that are going virtual and I'm not a huge fan.
No. Engineer, it's been proven over the years that engineers despise online webinars, right? Every company thinks, you know, that was the webinar craze. And then they go, why is only one or two engineers turning up to our webinar? It's because they suck, dude. It's like,
well, yeah, there's production stuff for sure. But actually, I think about it for conferences specifically. Like the reason I go to conferences is not the content. I mean, like the content is important and I'll usually step into a couple things there. But the reason I go, and you know, it's not every engineer, you're not going to be surprised by this, is the people, right? I want to meet people.
Yeah, of course.
Now it's like the virtual conferences are like, okay, well, we're going to stream this one person giving a talk. And it's like, I could have watched that on video.
It's the one time a year when, you know, the reclusive, always self-isolating. By the way, engineers have been self-isolating decades before
safe,
it became trendy. Right? Yeah. And it's the one time of the year that they come out of their shell and, you know, like a deer in headlights, they go out to the real world and they, you know, actually talk to other humans, you know. It's, And it's like in a year's time, 2 years' time, like people will have totally forgotten about that. People will be getting this whole thing and they'll be getting back to their regular lies, and they'll be going back to events and stuff, you know, because we'll have a vaccine or whatever, and everything will be hunky-dory, and no one will be worried about this anymore.
You know, so Alistair Allen wrote about this a little bit on Twitter as well, and it's like, so he works remote, I work remote, and like a lot of the times it's like events are kind of the only time to actually like be in person with, you know, people that you might be interacting with or friends with online, you know. You and I are probably not going to meet in person again until it's some kind of event that you go to and I'll fly there or similar kind of thing, right? I mean, or I go back to Australia.
Yeah. yeah, it's hard because it's a long way, you know.
It is. Yeah. Well, and I think you get network effects though too, of like multiple people. You could see more than just one person.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
If you get sick and you can't make it there, I could always, well, there's four of the people there I could see as well or meet new people. So.
Oh, offense, Chris, but if I'm going to fly all the way to the US in a virus tube, then I'm going to make the most of it, and I'm going to go to meet hundreds of people, not
of
just
course.
You.
Again. That's fair, man.
Sorry.
That's fair.
Yep.
I mean, and now I'm just going to, you know, sock you in the nose when I see you, you know?
Well, that's it. Well, same with you. You generously flew all the way to Australia, and, you know, and we met up, but
yeah,
you went to,
you
know, other. No, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. There were many others.
Yeah.
So, and you held many other conferences. But anyway, yeah, it'll all get back to a normal. So I don't think the events industry is going to change. It'll, you know, be hit on the head for a couple of years because, you know, like companies like O'Reilly, but they might realize, you know, because they'll still be around as a company and they go, oh, people want it. You know, they'll be, as you said, like people will be dipping their toes back in small time events and things like that. And all of a sudden, bam, one or two big companies will do the big events again, see people flock back, as they almost certainly will, and they'll go, and all the, you know, existing companies around these go, ooh, it's a thing again. Let's go.
Yeah, right. There's money. I mean, yeah, there's always things pop up when there's money, you know, like.
Yeah. Anyway, there's not much money in the events business, though, is there?
That's right.
It's a bit of a hard grind. So, yeah, I'd probably pick something else if you're keen on starting a new business. But anyway, it can work.
Yeah. Well, I think we are going to, so you kind of alluded to this too. I think we are going to see some layoffs, and hopefully not as much in the engineering sector, but I've talked to a couple of people that have already lost jobs, and our heart goes out to them. Hopefully that's very temporary as well. I've talked to some clients and they've talked about like, oh, well, we're just watching our cash position. And that kind of feels like 2008, where it was like, everybody just kind of clams up and they're like, until we know cash is coming in, there's no cash going out. It's like, oh, here we go again. So,
yeah. Everyone's going into cash. That's they're selling everything,
right?
It's a fire sale. So once again, opportunities on the other side. I mentioned this last a couple of weeks ago on the podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that there are, you know, opportunities to squeak out stuff in the margins and find new opportunities for people that are like, obviously there's a lot of medical opportunities right now, but I think there's other industries that are going to pop up too, so just got to keep your eyes out. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe consult on the side or do some small stuff, you know, see what you can
actually
do.
This was discussed on the forum just last night, the EEV blog forum, that is the only the best forum.
No, of course
it was discussed. People talking about, you know, there's so many people. I've lost count of the number of people who've now contacted me over the last couple of weeks saying, Dave, you should work on an open source ventilator. It's like, well, I have no idea how a ventilator even works. Like I would just bum around doing more harm than good. Like I'll leave it to the people who have a clue. You know, I'm not a mechanical engineer. You know, I'm not a sort of, if you need a board done, call me. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But anyway, yes, I am actually helping out on a virus detection kit.
Oh, great.
So anyway.
Oh, so MHUB, my workspace, is doing like a, you know, there's a Hackaday article about it. We'll link in, you know, there are a bunch of people working on like open source, broadly available, you know, low cost designs.
Yeah.
MHUB, same kind of thing, where I work, they're doing like a joint effort, and same thing. I was like, well, until the mechanical is kind of figured out, I'm like, I'm just give me a call when you need to control something, you know?
Yeah. <it's> a...
But
yeah, give me a call. Yeah. Anyway, so they were talking on the forum, everyone talking about, oh, how there's, you know, they've loosened the medical requirements. Like medical is normally one of the, apart from probably aviation or something, you know, is the most regulated industry out there, right? Yeah, the red tape is enormous. It's absolutely enormous. You know, it's just mind-numbing, the amount of red tape involved in that.
Yeah.
And they've loosened all that. Right now, so that, you know, they've loosened the regulations so that you can push these like do-it-yourself regulators and things like that into these settings without thing. And people are going, oh, it's a new revolution. Get into this. And it's like, no. As soon as this thing's over in 6 months or whatever, this is very temporary. As soon as it's over, you will be regulated out of business. It's like, yeah, I'd be careful. Yeah.
A lot of people are not like doing it for money. You know, it's not like this is a business opportunity. It's like,
I think that's what some people were hinting at on the forum. It's like, oh, you can do a new startup business, you know, getting in doing medical stuff and things like that. And it's like, no, you're going to come a gutser in 6-12 months time.
There's been a couple episodes of Embedded, I think, where they've talked about like regulation on code and, you know, FDA specific usually, but like, you know, the type of code you need to write and like,
every line of, for those that don't know, every line, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a standard for it where every line of code has to be vetted and reviewed.
Yeah.
Yep. Literally, and you pay per line of code. It's like, I think the industry rule of thumb is like $1 per line of code. So if you've got 10,000 lines of code to have it reviewed, it's like 10 grand to pay someone to do it. So yeah, right. It's a good gig. If you get it, there's a gig you can get into code review.
No,
you know, mind numbing.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway. Yeah. Trust me. That's a thing.
Yeah. I believe it. Yeah. 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 It's And FDA in the States is really, really stringent. And like, I remember, who was it? So one of my college buddies, he was working at a company that was doing stuff in the medical space and he just talked about how they just wouldn't change anything. So I was like, well, what are you doing?
Yeah.
He's like, well, we figure out when we have to change things and then we change things. But otherwise, we don't change anything.
Everyone becomes an obsolescence engineer.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
It's maintenance, obsolescence. Yeah, this part's gone obsolete. Yeah. Oh, let's spend the 6 months sourcing this new transistor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, I've been there. I've worked on that.
Yeah, I mean, like, it makes a lot of sense from a business perspective and, like, even the regulations. I get why they're there, but damn, like, it just sounds terrible.
And if you're used to, like, 9 months or even, you know, you're more traditional, like, 9 months in the startup scene kind of thing, or you're more traditional 18 months product design life cycle from concept to production, try the medical field. They're 5+ years.
Right.
Right. Product life cycles, right? It's enormous. Right. So, you know, I've worked on medical stuff that is like, it will not come out for the next 5, 6, 7 years. Like, it is like leading edge now. And by the time it comes out, it's maybe a little bit behind, but they're already working on the generation beyond that. And they've got, they have to, they still work on a new one every 18 months kind of thing, but they sort of keep it in the pipeline. And so to speak, so they might have 2 or even 3 generations ahead that they're actually working on and they're still selling the first generation or whatever. So, because the life cycles are so long, product development cycles, especially for anything that's implanted, for example, which is some of the stuff I was working on.
Right,
so,
right.
You know,
that's right.
If it's like, like that one's like really serious stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't mess with that.
But no, you can get it from, you know, Joe Blog's startup around the corner. You know, you can get your new implantable heart pacemaker, you know, go for it. if it's 3D printed case and
it's actually DIY, you got to actually like,
you got to sell it as a kit, you know, right?
Yeah. medical kits, that's the future.
Hey. Here's another weird thing I've noticed this week. There is currently a shredder truck out the front, as in one, like a big, you know, truck with a big shreddy machine at the back that comes around and shreds your stuff on site kind of thing. You know, shred your paper or your secure documents and stuff like that. That's the fourth one I've seen this week from my window.
Someone's getting audited.
There's a lot of, different companies. So I think there's multiple companies either going out of business or like going into lockdown mode and they want to shred all their secret documents or something. But yeah, it's the fourth different shredder truck I've seen this week. I mean, like,
also tax season, you know.
It's taxis?
Tax season here at least. Tax season, taxis. I said.
Oh, tax season. Sorry.
Yeah.
These audio codecs are a bit dodgy sometimes. We can't, you know.
Yeah.
Syllables don't, the odd syllable gets dropped. Tax season. No, it's not tax season here.
Okay. All right.
So you guys have tax twice a year, right? Is that the thing? Like at the end of, no.
One time a year.
You have a calendar you have a calendar tax year, don't you?
That's right. Yep.
Which finishes at December. Yeah.
That's the personal and some corporations.
Okay,
so
right.
Then other,
okay.
Other corporations have different tax windows and stuff like that. And then there's a delayed one as well. So, this year it's actually coming up in about 25 days is the deadline, but it got extended 3 months. So.
I got my first stimulus yesterday. I got my first government stimulus. Congratulations, me. I got $35. I had no idea. It was like, apparently, because I do a lot of foreign exchange trading, right? I'm buying goods, shipping goods overseas and stuff, right? So I've got to buy it in US dollars. So I've got to exchange currency all the time, huge amounts.
Oh, yeah.
To buy large amounts of stock. And so I use a foreign currency exchange service and I've got a business account with them and everything else. And they just sent me an email back last night saying, hey, here's your $35 back. There's like 15% off or something. The government's giving 15% off transaction fees for international, all right. For foreign exchange transactions. So, yay. I guess it's going to be bigger in the US. It's going to be bigger in the US, but you guys are going to get. Although the big businesses get the most of the $6 trillion.
Yeah,
it's currently $8 trillion total. Yeah, because they've already spent $2 trillion, so there's another $6 coming. So get a slice of that pie, folks, because it's your pie anyway. You're paying for it. this pie
get that
tastes
pie.
Familiar. Yeah. It's my own money. Yay.
I think I had this pie in my wallet earlier today.
or it's coming from all the other tax plebs out there. Mmm, that's tasty. Oh, goodness. Anyway. Suckers who pay tax, yeah. all the big wigs are laughing from their tax havens. Oh boy. Anyway, yeah. Let's not go there. Tax time. Anyway, taxes, both personal and businesses. The 1st of July is the start of the new financial year.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's boring.
Speaking of going overseas, I made a mistake.
What?
I was looking for a new cable. I was getting a custom. I'm getting a custom cable made, and I put my email in Alibaba, and so I was like contacting. You know, I basically put in like the request for quote. I was actually contacting a specific vendor, and then I put in a request for quote. And I woke up this morning, and I had like 6 emails and like a meeting scheduled. And I was like, "What? What just happened here?" And it was like outside of any of the. You know, it's supposed to be like on the Alibaba on the platform and stuff.
Oh, so you did it. So you did like a public request instead of a private quote request or something like that? How does that work?
So if you like find a thing you like on like Alibaba, right?
Yeah.
You can. So in this case, I was sourcing a cable and I basically needed just a shorter version of that cable. And I've done this before.
Yeah.
It's great. It's easy, right? You find someone who makes custom cabling or not even custom cabling, just like you find a cable that a weird looking cable that is close to what you need. You basically write to them and say, hey, can you customize? They say, yes, we can. There's a minimum.
That's another revolution in the quiet revolution in the industry. You know, if you think your $1 PCBs are impressive, go and get your custom cables, which was, when I was a boy, geez, getting a custom cable. Oh, man. Oh, no, sirree. Bob, that'll be $1,000 tooling. Yeah, $1,000 tooling, please.
You got to see what their capabilities are. Do they have the right connectors? And in this case, now you're just kind of searching around for like, I need like a 2mm JST. Okay, no problem. How many pins? What is the...
Yep. You can literally do a napkin sketch and take a photo with your phone, send that to them, and they'll make it for you. You know, it's like, oh, man. Yep.
Yeah, and
amazing.
I did that the first time, and... What I found was easier is actually I said, hey, can you actually send me the drawing for this, the one that I'm looking at online? So if you find someone who already has a part out there, you ask for the drawing, they send it to you, no problem. And then you just mark it up. And then you say, actually, I don't want this length to be 20 centimeters. I want it to be 10 centimeters. And then
you can do that even if it's not their cable, if it's not their particular one, that they just get the data sheet from somewhere else and you mark it up and they'll make it.
Yeah, I mean, usually they have a cable drawing, though. I mean, like, that's, a lot of these companies do, and it's great. And so...
So you find the nearest equivalent one that you want, find that supplier,
exactly.
And then go, hey.
Yeah. So the example from the first time I did it was like a USB. I just needed a USB A type, you know, like plugs into a normal USB jack. And then I didn't want it to go to like a micro or mini B, you know, I wanted it to be from USB A to just a connector. And I didn't care what the connector was either. I just needed it to plug into a board without plugging into, I didn't want to put down like a USB header because I didn't have the height.
Just a little 4-pin Molex or something.
Exactly. Exactly. And so like, yeah, I just found one that was like fine. And I was like, okay. And I made sure I could source the, you know, it was like a pretty generic, I think it was a 2mm pitch connector. I found the family that was fine. And then I just, I asked for the length to change. And they're like, yeah, that's no problem. We do this all the time. Yeah. So it was great.
What sort of volume did you have to get?
Well, and that's the other thing. I offered to pay for the sample. I feel like that's a big thing. It's just, I said like, look, I'll pay for the sample. I do want samples. And I wanted like 5. And they said, yeah, no problem. It was like 5. I think it was like for like $30 for the samples, another $30 for shipping. And so.
Nice.
Nope. Yeah, we do. And, you know.
Cheap as chips.
Yeah. It was great. Yeah, exactly. It really is, right? I mean, like you said, there's no tooling, there's nothing like that because they're already tooled up for it. So it's great.
Brilliant.
But the problem this time is, so what you can do on Alibaba as well is you can basically say, well, I just submitted this quote or this, you know, request for this type of, you know, usually because you're searching for a product type, right? In this case, we'll just use the USB example again. They like, hey, Chris was looking for a USB cable that's like this. And then you, after you submit the thing, after you submit the request to the people who actually make it, they say, do you want to RFQ it, right? And basically then it goes out to the broader world. And they...
RFQ is request for quote, folks, for that's those right. who don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Industry speak. We have to explain our acronyms. That was one of the things from good. Our feedback is that, you know, we have to explain stuff.
Yep. And and so you get a request for quote. And then in that case, it's basically, it's kind of like an open market then. And people look at it and they can offer you services. But then they also find you, find your email all over the internet.
Yep.
And email you. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
That's the downside. Custom stuff. It's a lot easier, like you said.
No, it's great. You can get custom almost everything these days. So it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's a revolution, folks.
I'll probably release this before this podcast goes out. But I'd shown you this, the custom like LED neon. I think I showed you that.
Oh yes. Right. Oh, that was ages ago.
Of the Contextual Electronics logo. I know, yeah. I literally just plugged it in for the first time. Oh, and so right. I've got that. finally.
You were amazed by that they just did, oh look, we'll do a custom thing for you. And yeah.
I mean, I sent them an SVG and they're like,
yeah.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah. They're great. Yeah, you just send an SVG and they're like, what color? Okay, and then it's done. It was just like $180 shipped, I think, or something like that. You know, for effectively like a custom neon sign around here would probably be a couple $1,000. So
sweet, I'm gonna have to get one. So they could do any color. Is there any limitations on the? I don't know about neon. Is there like limitations on the color palette you can get?
This is an actual neon, so I should say it's not. So it's actually like it's basically like LEDs. Encased in like vinyl that are like shining through a
right
like a diffuse material, right? So it's like a white LED and then they can put different colored things over top, but that's like way cheaper because actual neon, then, you know, you need thousands of volts and you need to have
and you have to form glass and
and it's beautiful. Like I really love the look of neon, but it's like it's just way out of my price range. So this is like way cheaper, and then this one they just mounted on laser cut acrylic. And so that's why it's so cheap.
Sweet.
So, yeah, you should get one. I'll send you my people, Dave.
Send me the link again, because I know you did at the time, but I've that's buried away in the stupid hangout chats thing that we do.
Yeah, right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Speaking of products, can we have a product update? Product update. Scammy product update.
Oh, I thought this was gonna be your product. It's not
my product. Shonky product of the week. We will revisit the Solus. Speaking of glass as well, beautiful segue. Mm-hmm. Solus glass, the graphene heater, if you remember that one.
I don't remember that one. Can you jog my memory?
The Solus heater, it's got graphene. Anyway, it was a Kickstarter, Indiegogo. It's this whiz-bang heater that was like 400% more efficient than other heaters because it had graphene in it. it had woo-woo graphene, you know, so they say, you know, oh, it's 400%, you know, I can't remember the exact numbers anyway. Yeah, I did a busting video on it, and this was like 2 years ago or something now, and somebody just posted an update on the forum where the comments on the Indiegogo page is that customers, multiple customers, have had them like explode, the actual glass sheets, because they're like, they're really funky looking, like they're like big panels, right? They're like a meter by a meter or something, you know, big square glass panels, and they look really like they're like slimline. They're designed to like be decorative, and you hang them on your wall and things like that. Right. And apparently, so big glass sheets, they started shattering and exploding. Like,
oh my goodness.
Like they,
because they're like heating them up and cooling them down.
So, yeah, something like that. So, yeah, let that be a lesson to you. If you're going to like sell a funky product with glass, just be careful.
Yeah.
You know what the heck you're doing, because they probably just, glass is glass, right? No, they didn't. They didn't get the special type they needed. And these things are exploding. With glass, like, exploding out and shattering everywhere. So, wow.
So, remind me, like, what it was again. It was graphene, but was it actually graphene, or was it just, like, a
they reckon they've got a graphene paste. So, it's, like, it's a regular heating element, right? So, they have, like, a heating element, and then they spread all this woo-woo graphene paste over it, right? Mm. And then sandwich the glass sheets on either side of the element and the graphene paste. Right. So it's like one of these infrared panel heaters, right? So it's an infrared panel heater that you either, you know, stand on the floor or you hang on the wall. It's designed to be, you know, decorative and things like that. And because apparently there's some research paper somewhere that says graphene is 400% more efficient or whatever it is. I can't remember the exact fission, you know. Mm. And of course, there's always a kernel of truth in these things, but they claim that if they just...
Right, and then they stretch that as far as they can get it, right?
As far as they get it. And, of course, it's no more efficient at all than a regular heater. So it's a complete bullshit. But, yeah, anyway, they sold lots of these things, and they're just shattering because, when you don't know what you're doing with actual materials, that's a huge thing. And, of course, it's, as you said, it's heating up, it's cooling down, and all this glass is eventually shattering. Yep. So, yeah. Whoopsie. Anyway, I think it's just glorious.
Yeah.
Oh, fitting end.
Speaking of heating things up, I took the plunge this past week, Dave, and I am a lead-free shop finally. I know that like some people are going to be like rolling their eyes and huffing and saying, I can't believe it took you so long, but I'm committed to it. I am finally... 2020 is lead-free year for me.
Let me guess, she who must be obeyed demanded that you get rid of lead?
No, actually.
No? Okay, right.
No. Huh. Yeah, it makes sense having it in the home too. No, this is actually just because I felt like I should have done this a long time ago. So I followed Greg Davil's suggestions on paste and got the GC10, which is actually a really lame product name, but it's pretty good paste. GC stands for game changer.
Oh god. Oh,
yeah, right.
Real groan.
So that's pretty bad. But yeah, GC10 is the type of paste, and it's really nice. So it's like he talked about it when he was on the show last in January. It's like shelf stable, you don't have to refrigerate it at all.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Oh, I should get some then.
It's a game changer, Dave.
And right, obviously. Right.
Yeah. It was 100. So I got it from DigiKey. It was $145 for a tube.
Ooh, for a 50 gram tube or something. Not 900 grams. Okay. Well, but that's a lot.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but still, you know.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. But it doesn't expire, right? Is there an expiry date or is it?
It does. No, it does expire, but it's like 5 years. I think it's like 3 or 4 years.
Okay. That's awesome. Yep.
I think the real thing I need to do is parcel it out and sell it to some friends and just kind of defray the cost across people.
Yep. I just don't use it enough, you know. So I've got some in the fridge, but it's probably expired by now. Every time I go to use it, like it's just expired. It's like, oh god. Yeah, you can use expired paste. It's not like, you know, but it becomes less and less effective. So
right. And I was in a bad spot for a lot of that stuff. I was using old paste and it just kept burning me, you know, not burning like that. I mean, it just kept having really bad reflow and it just looked really really bad, and you know, bad connectivity and stuff like that. So,
right,
having this is gonna, you know, help with that kind of thing.
Right. So he's still going through lead withdrawal symptoms, or
no? I'm doing great.
Yeah, you're doing okay. Okay. There are support groups out there for you, Chris. You know, there are.
Yeah.
If you need emotional support in this
in this
time of need, you know,
right,
reach out.
yeah I don't know, it's been okay though. Once I had to like rework the profile on the oven and stuff like that, like I didn't,
right, of course you have to tweak it, you gotta experiment and figure it out.
Yeah but there wasn't like really good guidelines, like, so you know, you always see the curves, but they didn't really, it doesn't translate as well to like the machines that I was using. So like I was using two different machines. The first one I put it through was like a three zone, like a conveyor belt style. And so, and it's just got like PID controllers for a top. There's like three on the top, three heaters on the top, two heaters on the bottom. And so there's like a preheat zone, and then there's like a soak zone, and then there's like a reflow zone, right? That's kind of the part of the idea at least. But like there's no speed changes. Right, that you can't like be like, oh, well, it should be longer in the soak zone.
Oh, really? So I can't speed up the conveyor or whatever.
Right. Well, how would you do that, right? Because you'd have to track where every board is, and it's, or you'd have to have multiple conveyor belts. This is just one conveyor belt.
Oh, okay. Yeah, true. Yeah, right.
I don't want to like turn up the temperature too much, or I'll like scorch components. And so, yeah, it just didn't, like, I put it through the first time thinking, you know, like there was like some guidelines on the one I was using.
Right.
And I put it up to the temperatures that were suggested, and it was just wrong, you know, and like nothing had reflowed. But the problem was, then I had already like evaporated all of the flux that was in the solder paste. And so I tried putting it through again. So that board actually ended up getting hand reflowed with a hot air pencil.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah.
It was real bad.
All right.
But then there's another one at the workspace I'm at, where it's like, you know, there's actual, like, it's a tablet and you can like define the different zones. And, you know, there's there's a slow ramp, and then there's a heat soak, and there's a reflow, and then there's like a cool off, right?
Yeah.
I didn't realize. So I was actually chatting with Greg. He was very nice for this time. And he mentioned that he does it with just like a toaster oven, which is awesome, but did not help me at all.
All right.
And
got one of those newfangled professional machines. There's your problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, kind of. And so I was trying to follow, like the GC10 data sheet was like, well, it doesn't just give you a recommendation. It's like, here's the different profiles and what the joints look like. It's like, I just want an answer, you know, and there's no one online that's like, here, I'm using the same machine as you, Chris, and here's the same paste, and here's the answer, you know? So you had to, like you said, you had to play around. So it turns out, long soak, like longer than I thought it would be. So it's like, I think it was like 140 seconds of like a heat soak to really get it to the right temperature, and then shorter, like a 60 second actual reflow at 235 or 240.
Yep.
But they, in the data sheet, they said like 250.
And that's going to vary if you've got like a 2 ounce copper board, right? For example, it's going to take longer. Right, exactly. If you've got larger thermal mass components, it's going to take longer. If you've got a mix, one of the horrible things is having a mix of large, really large thermal mass components and really small thermal mass components, because it's almost worth only putting through like the low thermal, or like either doing a two pass thing, or actually just hand soldering the large thermal mass components, you know, because they require such a long soaking time that you're going to damage the smaller thermal mass components.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, there's an art in doing this properly, and
right. But I always read about like shadowing too, like heat shadowing and stuff like that.
Heat shadowing's a thing. Yep. And once again, that depends on the type of oven that you've got. If you've just got an infrared oven, which is like a radiated thing, which is like the Solus heater, right? And so it's just a bunch of like Solus heater plates above, and it's just, you know, and it's just radiating down. Whereas if you've got one of the gaseous ones that can circulate and things like
vapor phase.
Vapor phase, that's the term I was looking for. If you've got a vapor phase oven, that can do it. But also you can get shadowing in the vapor phase as well, because circulating, okay. Depends if it's a random circulatory thing or whether or not it's a, you know, just a one-way flow circulatory thing. And it's, you know,
Yeah. And this, boys and girls, is why we have manufacturing engineers.
This is why, just give it to people who know these machines intimately. Just
well, and yeah, so this was a Neoden, like a cheapo. Yeah. The conveyor oven was like that, and it's like, okay. I mean, it gets it done. You know, like when I put like I said, when I put leaded boards through, it was fine because it was just really forgiving.
They were much more tolerant. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the trick. Ah, well.
Yep.
The price you pay for being eco-friendly.
Yeah, man. How dare I?
Yeah. Ah, well.
Actually, the last thing about the reflow, it was like, so I was doing that all last week. You know, like the whole week I was trying to get stuff done. I was trying to get like the boards. So basically, I knew that the shutdown was coming in Chicago. I knew it was going to happen. And I was like, I can't do reflow at home, so I have to get it done. I can do rework. I can do, you know, firmware programming. Uh-huh. That stuff's great from home. So finally, like Thursday night, the shutdown starts on Friday. Thursday night, I finish at like 6 p.m.
Right.
I had to pack up all my gear. You know, I had a car, packed up all my gear, like racing to get home, get everything out, walk into my house, say hi to my partner. And then I'm like, I left the goddamn boards in the oven.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Well done. Yeah. Was the oven off or was the...
It was, it was in the cool down phase.
It was cool down phase. Okay. Yeah, because if you don't know, those things come out like hotter than pizza. They're piping hot.
Screaming hot.
And you have to, don't touch them. Don't just go, oh, look at, you know, because you see it all the time. You get like managers and other marketing people come around the line and they are inspecting stuff. And then they go, oh, this is a nice board coming out. And they go to pick it up and burn their hands. What a bunch of dicks. Yep. So, interesting tidbit of the week.
Okay.
New segment. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, it's fascinating. I did a teardown of a power supply, right? The new Rodin Schwartz.
I saw that. That was great. I think I posted that on the subreddit, the LLC, the resonant mode.
The resonant mode controller. Now, I just assumed it was a resonant mode controller, right? But I don't think it is. As several people in the YouTube comment, like most people did it, most people just assumed that I was correct. And it was a resonant mode controller, right? Because everything kind of fitted. But if you actually put your thinking cap on for 5 minutes, as I usually don't do when I'm recording videos, right? They're just off the cuff, right? I don't really.
Right. It's editing when he does that, folks.
Well, I didn't say categorically in the video. In my defense, I didn't categorically claim it was a resonant mode converter. I said it looks like it's a resonant mode controller because I didn't tear down the whole product so I could see the components on the other side. I didn't reverse engineer it. It just, you know, looked like it. And it used transistors, specific MOSFETs in there that actually are purpose designed for resonant mode controllers. So it kind of all fitted, you know. Anyway, I don't think it is. And as some people have asked me to actually pull the whole board out and actually reverse engineer it, because I suspect that one other person suspected this. I think they're right, is that it could be a full shifted phase bridge. And this got me thinking, the interesting tidbit is how many variations of power supplies there are. Most people would not know them all. I guarantee.
Yeah.
Right. Even super experienced engineers could not name every single topology of power supply. You know, people might be able to name, okay, buck, boost, flyback. You know, then they might be struggling. A few people might say sepic. You know, they might say chuk. You know, there's a whole bunch of.
How do you even say that? It's C-U-K and that's pronounced chuk.
Yep, exactly. Cuck. Is how it's.
That's not it.
It's cuck.
No, it's chook.
It's cuck.
Okay. Well, I'm going to look it up while you keep talking about power supplies. But...
Okay. It's cuck. Just like it's a Bode plot.
I'm just. Okay.
Totally trolling everyone. Chook. No, it's cuck.
It's on Wikipedia. Although I guess I have to kind of side with you too.
Once again, here in Australia, it's cuck.
It says it's pronounced keycad on Wikipedia. So I can't necessarily. Uh-huh. I can't.
That's not definitive because you have. You know? Because you do know that I was correct in that it is KiCad. So,
Whatever.
Yep. Not Kai.
Okay, so there's a lot of types of power supplies, you're saying?
There's tons of different, you know, how many people would be able to pull a phase-shifted full bridge out of their backside, right? Not many, unless you've actually worked
Probably power supply designers, right? And I, that's something I was thinking about as you were like, as you were reviewing all that stuff too. And like, I've been, I just got through the inductor chapter of the X chapters from Art of Electronics. And like, man, it's just like, you guys start going to transformers and inductors and all that stuff. Like, that's what power supply designers are doing all day, every day.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yep.
And it's just like diving back in, not even diving back in, just like viewing again from afar. It's like, oh, I forgot all this stuff even exists. You know,
it's, I know. It's just like, exactly. Yeah.
You had the chart in your review too, where it was showing the different resonances and the different loads that it had on the inductors. I think you in that app note you were looking at, and that was really good. But like, I don't know. I haven't looked at power supply design in a long time.
This is stuff you simply do not learn, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you do, but if you're a power supply designer. Yeah.
Well, hands up if you had a specific power supply design course at uni, right? Nobody, right? Crickets, right? Yeah, you might learn buck and boost in a couple of, you know, topologies or something like that, maybe, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I know courses where you don't learn any of that.
Yeah, I think there's some, I forget who was, someone was on the show and they said that there was a really good program at one of the University of Texas schools. I want to say UT Dallas.
Oh, I'm sure there are specific classes that'll, you know.
Yeah, it was like basically the professor was a power supply designer and like, and it was like, oh, you're going to learn what they know, you know, so that's great.
Yeah, exactly. But Joe Bloggs, you know, engineering degree in every country around the world is not going to teach you 15 different types of bloody power supply topologies. There's so much other crap to learn. It's like, why are they even going to bother with that? You're lucky if they teach you what buck and boost is.
Right, exactly.
You might get it in an ancillary way. You know, oh, by the way, this is, you know, how, like, you might get it as an example in a magnetics, you know, you're learning magnetics and you might get that as an example thing or something like that, but it's not like engineers are going to do power supply design courses,
right? There's a Burr Brown power supply design course.
Burr Brown,
RIP. Yeah, I know, RIP. Yeah, but they actually still call it. I think they still call it the Burr Brown power supply design course. And I got to go to that. I think I've talked about it on the show before, but they still do actual seminars based on the old, like the design books and stuff like that.
Yep.
I
went to Walter Jung's course. He's one of the gurus. Was it Analog Devices?
Definitely. Yep. Yep, that's right. Yep.
So yeah, that was great. I've still got the notes from that. Still got the book notes. Yep. I don't know if you can get those online or not, but yeah, that was absolutely terrific. So
yeah.
Yep.
Speaking of Analog Devices, there is a new Analog Dialogue, one of our favorites here. This is an interesting app note from Bruce Hemp. The contactless fluid level measurement using a reflectometer chip. And this is something we actually talked to Akiba about from Freak Labs. I don't know how many years ago now. So I think it was 2016 actually. And so I'll link that show in, but basically he was doing measurement for like a UN project. I think it was where like they were making sure they weren't dumping sewage in Egypt. And so they actually like measured the trucks and stuff like that. But this is basically a way to measure. This is a similar kind of application, at least. How do you measure the
fluid level,
the height of fluid, and and basically this is doing that using one of their chips, and it's pretty cool. It's basically you impedance match using a transformer, and then I think you drive like a single pulse through it, and then that kind of bounces back based on the height of the tank, kind of thing.
So it's a time of flight thing.
Not 100% sure.
Right.
But it's in the app note, so.
All right. Yeah. Link it in down below.
Yeah, we'll link it in.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even though there is no down below in a podcast, because people just typically have their podcast automatically fed to them.
On our link page, on our wonderful links page. So, yeah.
So do we still have the app? Do we still have the Amp-Hour app? Is that still a thing?
Oh, that's a great question. That was actually done by the...
It was automatically. We didn't pay to have it done. Yeah, it was like you sign up for our Libsyn thing and we automatically got an app or something, didn't we?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think you had to pay like 99 cents for whoever was making that app, but it was really just a way to listen to the amp. I mean, it was like any podcast app was probably better than that was, so...
Right, yeah. It was a bit gimmicky, I think.
Yeah, probably better to just go with the... a podcast app, you know. People who are already listening, they don't need advice. They already got here. So unless you're listening on the web, in which case, you know, there are podcast apps. Look in your phone, you know, iPhones, Android, whatever. I use Podcast Addict these days. I like that. It's for Android. Right. It's pretty good.
Cool.
Yeah. So we were talking about learning a little bit as well. Are you doing any learning in your lockdown days? Are you
not learning as such. I'm going to do some experimenting again. I'm going to I'm going to revisit my alkaline battery test.
Oh, cool.
My alkaline leakage test, because if you don't know, last time I spent I did this long-term experiment, 9 months, tested all these different brands of alkaline batteries to see if I could get any of them to leak. And of course, the result was null. It was a null result.
Fluid leaking, right? You're not
fluid leaking. Not... Yes.
Okay.
It's actually potassium hydroxide that leaks from the battery, and then that mixes with carbon dioxide in the air to form all that horrible crystalline.
Yeah. Right. The crustiness.
Crystalline. The crusty white crystalline structure. So So I've got another bunch of batteries here, and I thought because last time I put too heavy a load on there. I put a 47 ohm resistor on there, and apparently that just like drained them too quickly, and they didn't have time to build up enough pressure inside over a long enough time period for them to force out the potassium hydroxide through the negative end seal, which is where it gives. If you wonder why batteries always leak at the negative end, it's because that's where the rubber seal is. That's where the rubber or plastic seal is, and that's where the pressure leaks out.
What is the actual like physical mechanism that's happening? So it's from a high load or a low load?
It's from a low load once it gets towards the end of charge. So once it's lost most of its charge, that's when you get slow leakage, that's when pressure starts to build up in the battery. Apparently, this is from what I can gather. There's, you know, not a huge amount of research out there, but from what I can gather, it's,
well, there probably is like inside of Energizer and, you know, like not publicly available. Like, how to make your battery
leak? It's not. Yeah, it's once again. Yeah. You've got to be a chemistry expert. Not only a chemistry expert, you've got to be a battery manufacturing.
Electrochemistry.
You know, electrochemistry research scientist or something, you know. So there's probably only a handful of people in the world who really know about this stuff. And It's the pressure buildup when the batteries are almost fully or practically fully discharged. Apparently, that's the pressure starts going up and up. And if you've got a bad seal, which you'll get on X percentage of the manufacturing bell curve, right? They're all not going to have a perfect seal. Some are just going to be, you know. So it's about a control thing. That's why some brands like Duracell or Varta or someone else might get a bad rep for they leak more than other brands, for example, because their process control may not be as, you know, good in terms of the seal. Right. And so the pressure builds up, and if the seal doesn't hold, then the potassium hydroxide leaks out, and that mixes with the air and
And then your remote has a bunch of crap in there. You got to scrub the terminals.
And scrub, if you get to it in time, because then you have to put a mild acid on it. You've got to put like lemon juice. You can put lemon juice as that nulls out base. Tell I'm not a chemist. It gets rid of the acid. It
neutralizes the base.
That's the word I was looking. Neutralizes the acid. I need to get Mrs. EEV blog on, who's a chemist.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, so luckily she doesn't listen. She'd be horrified. Anyway, who the hell did I marry?
Two hours a day. He's in tutoring with Mrs. EEV blog.
Chemistry tutoring, anyway. So yes, so that it forms an acid, so then it eats away your battery terminals, and that's where the problem is. Like, you know, you get all these corroded terminals, and if you don't get to it in time, and actually neutralize it with some sort of thing,
they'll go bad for good.
They'll go bad, and they'll just break off and rot away, and once your battery terminals are screwed, you know, pain in the ass to replace those sort of things. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so I'm going to do another test where I'm going to basically, I might do like several different ones because I don't know precisely which is the best method for maximizing my chances of getting a leakage. It's not like I can guarantee and make something leak, right? It's sheer right. statistics of, you know, can I actually get one to leak? And it's like, I don't know. I might get a null yeah. result again. So I'll tell you in 6 months' time whether or not it works. So I might get like several. I might discharge one to like 90%. And I might have like four different types, discharge one to 90% and then just leave it at 90% with no load at all. Then I might discharge one to 100%. But then again, what does 100% mean? Like, what does it like? Because there's...
To 1 volt yeah, or like 0.5 volts or what is it at? Right?
To nominally 0.8 is where most of it drops off, although 0.5 is technically where like 99.99% of the energy. But then you've got chemistry recovery, right? I can't remember the exact term, but you've got... they can actually recover part of the charge. So it's not like and it depends on how fast you discharge them as to how much charge you can actually recover. So the voltage might have dropped down to 0.5 volts, so it's effectively dead and you've used 100% of its charge, but then depending on the discharge rate, you remove the load and it can actually regather some of that charge because of how battery chemistry works
because of ions and stuff,
all that magic woo-woo. Yep,
right. Well, that's actually real. That's real science. That's not woo-woo. Woo-woo is like that
exactly. I know. When I say woo-woo in regards to engineering, it's usually something that I don't understand, you know. So it's RF woo-woo, you know. That's it. So yep. Anyway, so I might do like four different types and then each brand. So I've got like 12, 15 different brands or something. And then I might do like four of each in four different configurations. And oh, God. And then I just leave it for 6 months, the world's most boring experiment.
I would think it'd be better to like fast discharge a bunch of them because it all happens at the end, though. Right?
Oh, no. No. That's right. I'm definitely going to do either 90% or 100% discharge first.
All right.
So,
you are. Okay.
That's a given.
Because I was just thinking like. Yeah. Yeah, having like a current source or like a current load, you know, and just draw it down so that it's consistent and a high draw. And then you know when it gets to the point, you know, 1 volt or 0.8 volts or whatever it is.
Yep. That's what I plan on doing. Yep.
Got it. You should also, if you do it, you should set up a time lapse too.
No.
So that you could see it.
I could, but it's like one photo every day kind of, you know, time.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, no, I thought about that, but I'm always moving shit around and, you know, it's like, will it hold up for six? Will the time lapse hold up for 6 months? Will the thing bloody crash or something? I don't know. I don't even know if I've got a timer long enough to do that, right? Those little GoPro-y clone type cameras, they do have time lapse functions. I do have those.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, and then imagine if you left it there and if you didn't set it up right, imagine coming back in 6 months and going, oh, damn.
I mean, you could just watch it too. You could just, you know, take a picture every day.
Maybe. Yeah. So yeah, you could just leave a camera every day and then just power it up and manually press the shutter and take a photo. But, you know, but the problem is I've got so many of them, right? I got like, there's so many, like how do
I
you...
I figured they'd all be like in one spot. I thought they would.
I was going to set, before I separated them all into separate boxes. So I had an individual box for each one, sort of like with a seal so that it simulated being inside a product. Cause I thought there may be some, when the gas vents, it might like build up inside the product or something. And I don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can tell I got no clue.
I've watched your videos on alkaline stuff in the past and I really don't know much about them other than, you know, my use as a consumer.
Yep.
So it's interesting to see like how, and I think Jack Gansel's done some drawdown, like he did some like charting of stuff, at least I think, of voltages and stuff like that. So
anyway, I am determined to eventually get one of these bastards to leak, so
yeah, you can do it, man. I believe in you.
I can do it. You know, it might take me 5 years, but God damn it!
Like
I'm
watching paint
it.
Dry, but in, you know, just watching battery fluid dry, crystallize.
Anyway, so that's I might. So I'm going to do that for the rest of today. I'm going to set that up and discharge them. Don't know how long it's going to take to discharge all these batteries. There's a lot to do. So like I can string them all in series, right? Mm-hmm. But then I've got to set like, and then I can set a constant current discharge of like 100 milliamps or something, right? So yeah. I can do that. But then, like, some of them are, like, they're not all the same capacity, right? So then some of them might actually reverse charge, and so I'd have to monitor the cell voltage on each one. It's not like I can go, okay, I've got 12 in series and or 10 in series and then 10 times 0.8. So I cut it off when it reaches 8 volts or something. It's like, well, right, one of the cells could have already reversed, right? Yeah. So if you don't know, batteries can actually reverse charge. You can actually get a negative voltage on a battery.
Oh,
if they're in series inside your product, if you, this is why the manufacturers say don't mix and match, you know, instructions for your products say don't mix and match, you know, half dead cells with full dead cells. Because if you do that, and I showed this, I demoed this, that's one of the results I did get in my previous video, was that some of the batteries would actually reverse voltage. Because what happens is one, because they've got different charge rates, so as you discharge them, the one that was only half full has now got no charge left in it. So the other battery actually starts to reverse charge that already dead battery. So it actually reverse charges it, and you end up with an actual negative voltage on the battery. It's actually quite fascinating. So next time you take old batteries out of a product, actually measure them, and you might find, if you're lucky, that one of them's actually negative. So yeah, it's cool. And no, that doesn't cause leakage doing that. So apparently that changes the chemical process or something. And I don't know. It's all too hard. I'm just going to suck it and see. It's one of these things that I really don't know what I'm doing. You know, I've done some research, and I know that it mostly happens when at the end of charge, when the pressure builds up. So I'll do a few variations, cross my fingers, and we'll see. But Murphy will get me, guaranteed. Anyway.
I saw a tweet earlier this week. People who are in Europe, apparently minimum VAT has changed, and that's not good. So basically, they used to be like you could get something under €22.
And you wouldn't pay VAT. Okay, so you could buy your cheap ass boards and you could from China, and you wouldn't pay VAT.
And the processing fees are apparently what really gets you, because like it would be like you'd have a €20 thing, but then it'd be DHL would attack on a 10 euro processing handling charge if they have to charge for VAT. And so I think it's going to move down, but just so people aren't surprised about it, it sucks. I mean, it really sucks, but apparently maybe write to your legislators too, but that's going to suck for people that are like buying cheap stuff from AliExpress or Alibaba or whatever. So just so people know.
Okay. So when did that change happen? Cause I had somebody complain about this just this week.
I saw this tweet. Yeah, it was on the 19th, so last week. So there's an Elector article as well.
Right.
It's January 1st, 2021, maybe? That doesn't seem right, because that's still a while, but yeah, I'll link the article. It's
okay. Right, so it may not have happened yet, is what you're saying?
It may not have, yeah.
In that case, that's our future news of the week.
Yeah, right. Also, coronavirus is a vaccine.
Right, yes, it's just been announced, yes. Next
Chris
year.
Won a Nobel Prize for something.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
Yeah, right.
And I finally got my back and battery leakage results.
That's right, yeah.
And the Six winner is... Now,
Dave got it, yeah. Yep. Dave got an energizer to leak a little bit.
Right.
So.
Oh, boy.
All right, man. Well, hey, stay safe. Keep your family safe. And to all our listeners, hope you all stay healthy in isolation.
Indeed. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, talk to you next week.
Catch you next time.